Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Lynn S., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Toronto, Canada. Today is Wednesday, August the 22nd, 2018, and we are reading from the Big Book, page 99, second paragraph, If There Be Divorce or Separation, through two paragraphs ending with When the Family Came Back Too Soon, and commenting on both paragraphs. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Nancy T., the 12 Traditions, Susan S., and readers of the text, Stephanie L., Liette T., and Penny L.C. The reference numbers for Tuesday, August the 21st, the 10 a.m. meeting, 11816, and Wednesday, August 22nd, the 7 a.m. meeting, 11822. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Nancy T. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you. Nancy T., recovered compulsive overeater in Lewiston, Idaho. The 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Nancy T. And Susan S. will read the 12 traditions.
Thank you. Susan S. I. in Florida. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group will never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such would never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. 10. CAA name will never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me read and I pass.
Thank you, Susan S.I. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we're on page 99, the second paragraph, if there be divorce or separation, through two paragraphs ending with when the family came back too soon and commenting on both. And Stephanie L., could you read for us, please?
Sure. Hi, good morning, everyone. It's Stephanie L., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Southern California. If there be divorce or separation, there should be no undue haste for the couple to get together. The man should be sure of his recovery. The wife should fully understand his new way of life. If their old relationship is to be resumed, it must be on a better basis, since the former did not work. This means a new attitude and spirit all around. Sometimes it is to the best interest of all concerned that a couple remains apart. Obviously, no rule can be laid down. Let the alcoholic continue his program day by day. When the time for living together has come, it will be apparent to both parties. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. We have seen men get well whose families have not returned at all. We have seen others slip when the family came back too soon. And I love that we are in this part of the book, and because this is so vital to my recovery, being a woman in recovery with a husband who's also in our program and a daughter who is working another program in our home, it sure does make for some interesting things in our household. I really like the part in the first paragraph that talks about if their old relationship is to resumed, it must be on a better basis, since the former did not work. This means a new attitude and spirit all around. And that means that, you know, I have to look at my behavior within my relationships, within my home and within my family. And, you know, in this disease, you know, my relationships are a mess. My home is an absolute mess. And that means that, you know, I have to look at my behavior and focus internally versus externally and make sure that I'm, you know, practicing these principles, which is the hardest to practice in my home with my family. But if I want to stay a recovered woman, then I need to do my best on a daily basis to lean into my higher power and treat my family the way I would like to be treated. And then that second paragraph, and I have it highlighted, underlined, remind the prospect his recovery is not dependent on people. It's dependent upon his relationship with God. And, you know, there is nothing externally that is going to fix me, whether it's food or alcohol or gambling or sex or shopping or whatever, overworking, overexercising, whatever it is. You know, my dependence has to be upon my relationship with God, you know, on my own power, things are a mess. But when I lean in and I surrender and I work these 12 steps, which unblocks me to my higher power, then, you know, the obsession is lifted and I am able to be one of many and to be the person that my God would have me be. And, you know, it also takes me back to the paragraphs we read a few days ago, you know, burn into the idea of the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trusts God and clean house. You know, if I do this work, I am unblocked and I can connect with this power that has done amazing things in my life and has performed miracles and continues to perform miracles on a day-by-day basis. I can recover without a husband or children or parents or a job. It doesn't matter what it is. I can still move forward and recover as long as I am depending on relying on God. And when I depend and I rely on God, all my relationships get better. When I'm blocked from God, it's all selfishness and it's about me, me, me. And, you know, if I can do these things, then I can reach my hand out to someone else and share my experience and strength and hope with them. So with that, I'll pass. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Thank you, Stephanie L. The line is now open if you would like to share on what was just read. And please say your name just once as it helps me hear everybody. Who would like to share?
Janice,
Wendy.
PM.
Leah TV.
Wendy. Kathleen O.
Reggie O. I don't know if you got Wendy M.
KB.
Okay, let me just tell you who I did get. I missed somebody in there. I have Janice PM. I believe I heard Liat T. Kathleen O, Reggie O, Wendy M. Did I miss somebody?
KB.
Pardon me?
Sherry KB.
Okay, great. Let's go with that lineup then. Janice PM, Leah T, Kathleen O, Reggie O, Wendy M, and Terry KB. Janice, could you start us off, please?
Oh, I'd be glad to. And thank you so much for your service. And good morning to everyone here. My name is Janice PM, and I'm from Massachusetts. And I'm a grateful, compulsive eater, recovered. Yeah, you know, if there be divorce, separation, I don't know how to begin. You know, I was such a self-righteous, compulsive overeater in many, many years ago, maybe 40 years ago, I came into a program and I said to my sponsor, you know what? I know I'm not going to be married. I cannot stay married to this man. I just can't. It's just not, I don't love him. He doesn't do what I want him to do. Or we just don't, you know, get along or whatever it was. And you know, he really never, you know, he didn't have any addictions, but I did. And she said, don't say that because you never know. Well, let me go fast forward. I have been married for 54 years, and I just lost my husband on the 14th of July. And guess what? We were still married. So you see, you just never know. And the reason why I'm saying this is because, you see, if I got my way, I would have been separated because I was looking for something, you know, other than what I thought I needed. And because of this program, I found out about me. Never mind about him. Never mind about my son. I found, you know, relationship with the God, I had a relationship with God, but I told him what to do. You know, I wanted this, please give me this. You see, so it shows you, it shows me that my life was so unmanageable by me. So, you know, today, yeah, we are separated. But, you know, thank God that I went through these steps. And I didn't have a sponsor to say, okay, yeah, you better separate. Oh, yeah, you better divorce. You know, I see it's not working. I had a sponsor that guided me. She had a power higher than herself because as a sponsor, I'm not a therapist. I can't tell anybody. I can, you know, guide them through these steps on how I did this program, how I went through these steps and found out my character defects, never mind about anybody else's, and that's how I grew to have a spiritual relationship with a higher power that I never had before. Because if I depended on somebody telling me what to do, or depending on my husband of 54 years, now that we are separated, earthly separated, I would be lost. And I'm not lost today because I have a power that's next to me that's getting me through this wonderfully. Yeah, do I have sad times? Of course. But I'm not blaming him for my disease. So when it says remind the prospect, that means they're telling me as a sponsor that just remind, keep reminding every day that you work with that new prospect, that, you know, just, let's see, ask God, you know, don't depend upon me. Don't depend upon the people and the vision for you. Yeah, you could call them, but they're not your God. And they're not, and don't depend, because you're going to get disappointed, trust me, on who doesn't do what, this and that. But depend upon a higher power, and it will come so naturally to you as you progress and grow, get that spiritual awakening, and then you're going to grow, then I grow more and more.
Time, please.
And more. And with that, I'm going to pass, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Janice PM. Liat TD, it's your turn, followed by Kathleen O. Press star 1 to unmute, Liat.
Hello, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Oops, sorry, I was talking to myself. Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for this reading. I love it. I love everything in the book. I was thinking about, self-will and human power that didn't work for me, and I exhausted it to almost death and insanity. So, you know, I am so grateful that the book suggests for me a power greater than me to seek, you know, a relationship with God and not people. I wanted a divorce the day I got married, you know. I didn't know what I want in my life. I want this. I don't want this. I want to be in a relationship. I don't want to be, you know, I have sponsees that think that if they're single and they think if they have a relationship, then they're going to be better. Then they'll be able to have a good life. You know, I don't know what I want. You know, and I need a new attitude, a new spirit all around me. And so I love that it says that I need to watch out from, you know, undue haste, you know, exceeding rush. Like, I'm going to rush into this and I'm going to just make that decision because I know what I want, but I don't. You know, a sick mind cannot fix a sick mind. And I was thinking when I was reading about this, I work with preschoolers. I'm a preschool teacher. And I was thinking about the development of the sixth sense that is necessary for me to recover, you know, a sense that has been neglected my whole life. And working with young kids, you know, they have paint on the table and they just want to rub their whole body on it. And, you know, the little babies put sand in their mouth and they spit it out. And, we exercise and practice and use those senses, the five senses, the hearing and touching and smelling our whole life, and so they're very sharp at some point. But the sixth sense, spiritual sense, is underdeveloped. It's not developed at all for me. It wasn't developed at all. And so my guide, you know, has to become that sense, God sense, you know, where I'm listening and God is telling me what to do, and I'm feeling God, and I'm hearing God, and I'm touching God, you know. And so, you know, living by that sense, and what a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful way of living. And that's the difference. That's the change. That's the psychic change that happens in my life, is living by the sixth sense. So I'll pass. Thank you for your service.
Thank you, Liat TD. Kathleen O, it's your turn, followed by Reggie O.
Good morning, Lynn. Thank you so much for moderating this morning. This is Kathleen O., recovered in Northern California. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. And, you know, all I can say is thank you, Vision, because through this meeting and being on this line for almost since it started, very close to when it started, I have been able to open my eyes to what this big book is telling me. And it's so much changed how I think and feel. And by just understanding what it's saying, when I first came into 12-step recovery for food addiction, I was very willing. So I got abstinent and I stayed abstinent for a really long time. But, you know, when I would pick up the big book, which I was told to read 2 pages every day, I just read the pages and the whole time thought, I can't relate to this. This is about alcoholism. I don't get it. And so what a gift to have this meeting. And, you know, I my husband and I talked about separating, talked about divorce so many times I can't even count. And I always thought that if he would just change, everything would be fine. And when, you know, when I learned through this book that when I place myself unreservedly under the care and direction of my higher power, I will feel safe and protected no matter what kind of calamity is going on around me. And I had to stop depending on other people for my happiness. I had to stop thinking, if only this was different, if only that was different. I had to start thinking, I need to be different, and how can I be that way? So, you know, with this relationship that I've established with my higher power, I have a way of living where I'm told my problems will be solved or my problems will be answered. And as long as I keep that connection, they are answered, not always in my time frame, but they're answered. And I'm always amazed when they are. It's really about staying out of fear and staying in faith with me. And if I don't stay connected, talk about self-will run riot, you know, if I don't have a strong relationship with my higher power, I go back to ego and absolutely nothing goes right. So, you know, recovery is having a personality change. And how do I get this personality change? Where I started thinking different, feeling different, and acting different. It's by every day staying connected with my higher power, working these steps, and absolutely by working with others. That really cements the deal. And it is just so, so amazing. So, you know, it's like my desire to change had to be greater than my desire to stay the same. And when I was willing to change, miracles started happening. Life isn't perfect, but it always works out okay. And I pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kathleen O. Reggie O., it's your turn, followed by Wendy M.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for your service. This is Reggie O. in Los Angeles area. And I have loved reading, listening, reading, hearing everyone share on working with others since it started. It's just so rich for me this time. And you know, let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. You know, well, I mean, this section is speaking specifically about family, right? So what's happening with the family? Are they together? Are they apart? And I was just reminded, though, however, that unless there could be a fill in the blank after that, let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless this or unless that. Because what this book, The 12 Steps, are all about is creating, developing a relationship with a higher power that will solve all of our problems and with whom we can trust and rely on for each and everything in our life. And a little bit earlier, it tells us, you know, that we have to, you know, we can't play, if we place our dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God, we're in trouble. Or we, you know, if I place my dependence upon anything before God, then I'm in trouble because I've lost my anchoring. I've lost my core. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon other people, but dependent upon that relationship. And you know, I've thought about, like in times in my life when I've been single, I've looked out at people in relationships and thought, oh, if I was just in a relationship. And when I've been in relationships, I've looked out at people who were single, say, oh, if I could only be, you know, I think that must be the answer. You know, it's the, you know, that answer out there that is other than what, you know, than what is. And it reminds me of the food, you know, which is where the beginning of where I learn all these lessons. I put my dependence on food and compulsive eating down so I can place my dependence on a higher power and not on any other person, place, or thing. And I really do get to start learning about that with the food. And, you know, I'm just today grateful that my relationship with my higher power is not only is that do I like feel like I need it, you know, I'm afraid not to do it or whatever, but I think one of the shifts that I am so grateful for is that it's such a deep desire. You know, it's like my deepest desire to grow that relationship, to have it be more intimate, to listen more closely, you know, and follow more deeply, knowing that I'm yet always taking, you know, action. And yeah, so great to be doing this work with you all. And I'm also reminded too that this is, you know, all of this is talking to us in the 12th step as we're working with other people to pass along. So thank you. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Reggie O. Wendy M., it's your turn, followed by Sherry KB.
Yes, good morning. Wendy M., recovered in Boulder, Colorado. Thank you, God, for entire abstinence this morning. Thank you, God, for this line. Thank you, Lynn, for your service. So what pops out for me is pretty much what everybody's talking about. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people, dependent upon his relationship with God. And I can tell you that not only am I an addict with food, I'm an addict with people, right? Like my whole life, addicted to people. They will fix me. They will fill my God-sized hole. I'm spending lots of time asking people, will you be my mommy? Maybe you'll be my mommy. Or will you fix me? Will you be my higher power? You know, and when I make others my higher power, I'm in trouble instantly, right? Absolutely instantly, because I have the disease of more. Because even if I get the attention from the boyfriend, it's never going to be enough if he's my source, right? I'm like chasing my tail, right? And what's happening for me right now, I am going through a divorce and I am dating someone. And when I wake up scared in the morning, it's always because the boyfriend's not going to be enough today, right? And so what's happening for me, what's interesting is now when I feel that fear, that's God knocking on my door. That's not bad that I feel the fear. I thought it was bad. Something's wrong. Nothing's wrong. God's just knocking on my door. And God's just saying, it's about me, Wendy. You want the relationship to be with me. And until you get that, you will be in fear. And you'll be in fear because you're afraid it won't ever be enough. This guy will never be enough. And it turns out that when I take the focus off my partner and put the focus on my higher power, it turns out that my partner's enough. He does enough. I do enough. We are enough. And that's a huge relief, because anytime I'm making my partner something more than he is, right, making my higher power, I'm in trouble. I have to control the situation. I've got to control him. I've got to test his love constantly. And I promise you, it'll never be enough. So for me to know today that he's enough, I'm enough, that's huge, right? And the other piece here is when I do self-care, I get to God. That's how I get to God. I take care of myself. And I get to take care of myself today. You know, I wanted you guys to take care of me always, always. And the belief that I can't take care of myself is a complete lie, right? And so I get to go to God today, and it's so freeing to know I can take care of myself. It's so freeing to have a relationship with God. And I forget, and I get scared. And that fear is just God's way of saying, I'm right here, right now. I'm with you. And everything you're feeling right now is perfect in this moment. And you're perfect in this moment. There's nothing wrong. You're just feeling a feeling because you need to get to me. So God is always going to be available for me if I see it, if I'm willing to lean in and go, oh, this is about me going to a guy rather than a guy. This is huge.
Time, please.
And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Wendy M. And Sherry KB, it's your turn.
Good morning, Lynn. Good morning, everybody. It's Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered compulsive overeater. Thanks so much for your service, Lynn, and everybody on the line, and welcome any newcomers. you know, everybody has said something. I feel like I'm a Siamese twin to Kathleen O. Because of some of the things she said, she took my ideas. Just kidding. Anyhow, yes, I'm looking at the second paragraph that the first paragraph. We're reading paragraph 2199, and it talks about that we must be on a better basis since our former did not work. This means a new attitude and spirit all around. You know, I mentioned that I have a loved one that is currently uses, and I have really had to adjust my attitude towards that, and especially my judgments, and had to let that go. I had to learn to find some compassion because of, you know, understanding that, you know, I have my disease too, and even though it's in remission right now and I'm recovered, I'm never cured, and I've learned to have a lot more compassion and less judgment, to love patience and tolerance is my code, and that, because I'm choosing to be here. But I had to change my attitude around this, because I do have a choice, because if I don't think I have a choice, then I'm a victim. So that's what I've learned about that. So my attitude had to change all the way around as well. And due to that, you know, I've made some decisions lately to do some holiday things with some friends, due to the fact that my loved one doesn't like holidays. So, and that was, it was painful, but I knew it was the right thing. And so I'm, you know, allowing this person that I love to be who he is, instead of me trying to make him who I think he ought to be. And that is huge changes for somebody like me, who is always, you know, is trying to control the situation and make what I thought was the right thing. Instead, I turned to my higher power and ask for, God, what is the right direction? What do you want me to do? How do you want me to be? Help me to see this person the way you see them, God. And then this, to me, this sentence reminds the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It's dependent upon his relationship with God. To me, this is one of the most important sentences in this book. I've got it like, you know, bells and whistles and, you know, everything all around it, because this is the most important thing that I can do, is to have a relationship with God, because if I do have my relationship with my higher power, all my relationships end up taking care of themselves. And I know that, you know, when I wait in God's time, when I'm in God's waiting room instead of Sherry's waiting room, everything goes so much better. With that, I pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Sherry KB. If you've come on the line a little bit later, we're on page 99, the second paragraph, if there be divorce or separation, through two paragraphs ending with when the family came back too soon, and commenting on both. And if you'd like to share, please say your name just once, as it helps me hear everybody. Who'd like to share?
Stephanie N.
Julie C. Brandy M.
So far I have Stephanie N, Julie C, and Brandy M. Is there anyone else?
Marilyn T.
Okay, let's go with that lineup. Stephanie N, Julie C, Brandy M, and Marilyn T. Stephanie, can you start us off, please?
Okay, this is Stephanie N, recovered in Kansas. Thank you for your service. This was reminding me that I have to place my value only in God's hands and not allow my self-seeking to get in the way of my relationship with God. And this week I had a lot of defects coming up with perfectionism and self-seeking. They were coming up a lot on my inventory and my selfishness. And so last night I asked, you know, my higher power to reveal to me, you know, what is going on. But I didn't wait for the answer. And this morning, I got really mad at my daughter. This morning, I got really impatient with her, getting her ready for school, and got her to school. And then I came home, and I really got deep into my meditation, and I waited for the answer. And my daughter has a lot of just little quirks. And she just started school. And what was revealed to me is that my fear of her being rejected was so great that my perfectionism and self-seeking is coming up. And I'm placing her value in the hands of others. I'm putting her value in what other people think of her and not wanting her to be rejected because my fear of rejection is so great. And so I can project my own fears onto other people, and that will separate me from God. My perfectionism, my self-seeking, and all those things, they can just, you know, get in my way. And I have to completely rely on God. I have to let go of all of those things. And anyways, I'm my daughter's getting loud, so I will pass, but thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you, Stephanie N. Julie C., it's your turn, followed by Brandy M.
Hi, this is Julie P. from Southern California. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. So I love this. This is what my whole life has been like for the last year. To actually be close enough to God where I don't let other people's moods, attitudes, comments affect me and my connection with God. That is just an ongoing huge thing for me right now. You know, I continually am looking at other people. Oh, but if they would change. Oh, if they would change. And I know it's me that has to change. And so I'm continually seeking God to help me change. And I'm just not getting it. I'm like, you know, I get into I'm doing great, and I get into the relationship, and then all of a sudden, everything that person does is affecting me and how I'm living my life. And I hear so much on these lines, well, help others, you know, and so direct your attention towards, you know, something else and help others. And it's like, whenever I get into helping this other person, I get resentful and feel like I'm taken advantage of. And so I'm continually directed by people in my life and by my higher power to go back to Him, go back to your higher power. And it's so hard for me because I feel all this guilt. You know, I'm this people pleaser. I've got this thought in my head from early childhood, I think, you know, that if I don't do for others what they want me to do, then I don't love them. And then I continually get that message back from other people. If you don't do this, you don't love me. And so my whole thought process has to change and be so connected with God that I really get that clear signal like, you're okay, you're all right, what you're doing is okay. And it's a continual struggle with me, you know. The other day, my boyfriend had to go to the doctor, and I went to the doctor with him, and then the following day, he needed to go back to the doctor. And I had a meeting I needed to go to. I had missed my meeting the night before, and so I told him, you're going to have to go yourself. And, oh, my God, that's so painful, telling somebody they have to do something for themselves, and I can't be there for them, you know? So I really have to get with God and connect with God and be like, it's okay. You're all right. You're doing an okay job. You know, you're not a failure because you can't be everything for everyone. So with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Julie C. Brandy M., it's your turn, followed by Marilyn T.
Good morning. It's Brandy M., recovered compulsive overeater in Alberta, Canada. When I read this, or when just in hearing all the shares and stuff, I mean, I'm on my second marriage. My first marriage failed horribly because I was in my disease. And I remember being this person that, you know, I can't recover because we're both addicts. And, you know, it was just so unhealthy. And we fought constantly. And it was horrible. And it's funny because he ended up leaving me. And I was like, you know, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough to even be with an addict. Wow. Like, you know, no one's ever left me before. But unfortunately, my disease had got to the point where I was just hurting everyone around me. And he was probably my biggest target because I felt shitty about me. So I needed to make sure that he felt shitty about him. And it's, I think somebody's unmuted. It says, let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. You know, I didn't get that opportunity to have my family back because my husband decided that we were done and he didn't want to try again. He had moved on. And that was really hard for me to accept because all those feelings came back of, you know, not being good enough. And, you know, because the only way I feel good about myself in my disease is if other people like me and if other people are filling my God hole, you know, that was a really hard blow for me to take. But as time went on, when I started to get back into recovery, I could see that situation for what it was worth. And today I'm grateful that my husband decided that, you know, we weren't going to take a second try, because today he continues to be in his disease and we have two kids together. And when I was in my disease, it was constant fight over everything. And, you know, today that relationship looks very different. Many of you know, we've had a hard, you know, month, and, you know, my husband was able to say to me, like, you know what, I'm here for, or my ex-husband, I'm here for you, and hug me. And, you know, it was like, wow. And I don't argue with him anymore. He's still in his disease, but I can still stay recovered. When he says or does things that maybe don't fit right with me, I go to God and I talk to God, or I go to others and I tell them what I want to tell him, but I don't go to him and freak out at him anymore. I don't do those things. And in turn, our relationship is so much better for our kids. And, you know, our kids are starting to see the addict tendencies as well. And I can just show love and support and tolerance and help them get through their relationship with their dad because of his addiction. And I don't have to condemn him. I don't have to be mean about it. I can just help them see, you know, that they don't act like this because they don't love you. They love you. It's just that we're sick people. And so I'm so grateful for this program and the changes that it's made to my family, you know, the new family that I have today and still, you know, the other hanger-oners. It really changes, and I'm super grateful. So thanks for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Brandy M. Marilyn T., it's your turn.
Hi, this is Marilyn T. Can I be heard?
Yes, thank you.
This is Marilyn T. from Northern California, and gratefully recovering compulsive overeater. The one that kind of is the first paragraph that really I center on means a new attitude and spirit all around. That is how I'm going to have better relationships now. I, like Brandy M., was in a relationship marriage when I was in my disease and he was in his. We did divorce. He is still in his disease, and that is his path. That is not my path. My path is to build a better relationship with my higher power, to have kindness, tolerance for all people, even my extended family, which would be my parents. My dad just came to visit. And it's always interesting to see how in recovery you have a different relationship with someone. It takes two to argue. My dad and I were great debaters and arguers. And when one party, which would be me this time, does not do that, it's interesting how it does not escalate. I'm so thankful for this program, so thankful for the solution that is in this book and for my sponsor who has helped me on that path. My relationships with other people have all improved, and it is just a miracle. My relationship with my son, who was also in his disease, and he is now in recovery, and so am I. The relationship we have now is one that is strictly based on my dependence on God, and I would not have these things if I did not have that, if I did not work a program every day to be closer to my higher power. And with that, I pass. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Marilyn T. We have time for one more share. Who'd like that?
Hi, Carol R.
Carol R. I believe there was another name there as well.
Miriam Rifka. Carol can go ahead. That's fine.
Okay, Miriam Rifka, if you both go quickly, how about 2 minutes each? We'll get everybody in. So, Carol R., can you start for us, please?
Sure. Hi. Thanks, guys. This is Carol R. from Pennsylvania, just north of Philly. Boy, oh, boy, when I was reading this, the back and forth of, you know, should they stay married, shouldn't they stay married, the separation, if they're separation, maybe they shouldn't get back, the whole deal, it was just reminding me of when I first came in the program. My husband was 5 years sober in AA, and he introduced me to somebody that introduced me to the program. So when we first got together, I was in the program, and I was, like, trying to work on myself and be in a relationship with somebody else, which was really hard. Like, the first 3 or 4 years of our marriage and our togetherness was really strained. And I can see now, but when, you know, God in his infinite wisdom, right, knows what's to be. And, you know, I have to try to practice acceptance, you know, acceptance and listen to God's will and pray for God's will. And that's where I'm at today. But, you know, fast forward many years later, our marriage really struggled through because, you know, I guess we put our will into it and said, hey, we ought to go through with this, when really we probably should. We should have waited, you know. And there's been a lot of backlash with the kids and just a lot of tension through the years. And right now it's actually really good. And things are, you know, things are working out and stuff. But relying on God instead of others is, like, so important to me today. And but yet, my triggers, like, you know, my mom, who, she didn't have enough time for me. I mean, God rest her soul, she was dealing with her own stuff, but I always felt like she didn't have enough time for me. And then whenever that comes up in my relationship with my husband, it triggers me, you know? And the trigger comes so fast. It's just like that thought, you know, it's okay to take the first bite. It's a lie. The trigger comes so fast for me that I forget in that moment to depend on God. And my little kid steps in and says, okay, I'll just drop up real quick. My little kid steps in and just, you know, just completely goes to that, like, trying to get my needs met through my husband instead of God. So I'm a work in progress, and thank you so much for this program. Thanks for letting me share.
And Miriam Rifka H., you have 2 minutes. Please go ahead.
Thanks so much. This is Miriam Rifka, H., recovered in New Jersey. And I've been listening to snippets of the 7 o'clock meeting and now this meeting, and I just keep hearing the same message again and again. And I wanted to share something that happened this morning. I woke up, I came downstairs, and after a few minutes, all the electricity went off in my home. And I called my husband, and I said, what's going on? And he said, well, I don't know, why don't you call the company? And I said to him, because this does happen sometimes, did you maybe forget to pay the bill? Is that why? Like, maybe they're shutting it off. Did we forget? He said, no, I don't think so. I should be up to date. And I called them, and they said they're going to send someone out to look at it. And later, when he came home, he said to me, were you having ugly thoughts about me earlier, about not paying the bill? And I looked at him, and I said so sincerely, Absolutely not. You manage our finances. I appreciate that. You do the best you can. And, you know, I know that this isn't fun for you. I know it's not easy, and I appreciate it. And that, for me, was a huge step, because in the past, I have been a blamer. I have been, a finger pointer, and all my problems are because of you. And I felt so grateful that I was able to genuinely express my gratitude to him about how much I appreciate what he does. And that's because of the work that I do here. You know, that's the work that we do here, is I stop the blame and start living in reality and start living with a higher power as the source of all of my inner peace and all of my, I don't know what the right word is, okayness, and not my spouse. I've looked to him for that for way too long, and it's the wrong address. Thank you for this opportunity, and with that, I'll pass.
And thank you, Miriam Rifka H. Thank you to everyone who shared and to Team Wednesday. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Liat TD please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Yes, hi. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you can't transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.